Okay, so this morning I'm going to talk about, I'm daring to give tips from the Zen perspective on the Sermon on the Mount. I'm audaciously going to do that. So here we go. First, let me read the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those are they who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Okay, so let's start with the poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Well, for me as a Zen student, a Zen teacher, that just means freedom from the vanity of I am so-and-so. That vanity that we cling to. And sometimes it's a shadow of the vanity in which we put ourselves down. But when we're poor in spirit, it's hard for us to have any vanity. And it's hard for us to have a fixed mindset. Now, of course, we can fixate on that too, but I don't think that's what Jesus meant. He meant when we don't know, there's a more of a chance that we'll discover the kingdom of heaven, which for us is what? Just our Buddha nature, just our still, quiescent nature. It's always available, always here. So this morning I'm going to talk about two or three books that have been written in the last 10 years that relate to some of this material in here. One is a book by a woman named Carol Dweck. And Carol Dweck talked about fixed mindsets and people who have fixed mindsets. Some of you maybe know this book. And then people who don't have fixed mindsets. Well, if you're poor in spirit, in the sense that Jesus is talking about it, it's hard to have a fixed mindset because you don't know. You just don't know. You don't have anything to cling to. And the example, Carol Dweck gives a lot of different examples of well-known celebrities and leaders who had fixed mindsets and people who had or have flexible or growth mindsets. And I did talk about this a couple of years ago. One of the people she talks about is Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was not good at basketball. He was not good. He didn't make the high school team, but he practiced every day. He practiced. And then when he couldn't get into the college that he wanted to, because again he still wasn't good enough, and he practiced. That's the story as she tells it, and that's his biography kind of supports that. So he had an opportunity. He had practice. He practiced, but he didn't have a fixed idea of who he was or who he was going to become or what he had been, or he would have given up in high school, or he would have given up in college. Another book that some of you have read is a book by Malcolm Gladwell called Outliers. How many of you read that book? You haven't read that book. Oh, you have. Outliers. Well, he also talks about leaders in our culture. And he starts by talking about Bill Gates, whom we think is this incredible genius. He said, oh, okay, you think Bill Gates is an incredible genius, but really, Bill Gates had opportunity and he practiced from the time he was in junior high school. Because in junior high school, he was in an upper middle class Seattle environment where these women got together and they bought this computer access for the kids that nobody else had. And he took to it, and he practiced every day. And in high school, he lived only a walking distance, a stone's throw from the University of Washington. They happened to have the most advanced computer lab in the country. And between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., every morning, it was open to whomever. And so unbeknownst to his parents, all during high school, he spent from 3 to 6 a.m. In the computer lab at the University of Washington. Opportunity and practice. Opportunity and practice. The Beatles. So the Beatles, when they burst on the scene in 1964, and some of us are so old we remember that, when they burst on that the scene, they had already done 10,000 hours of performing. They had done as much practice performing as most bands do in their entire lives. And where had they done it? They had done it in Hamburg, Germany, at strip joints. Strip joints where they had to play 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, and where they really had to play to capture people's attention. They really had to play. So they learned to play lots of stuff. They played it over and over. They tried jazz. They tried many different things just to try to get people's attention. And because they were into doing it, too, because they wanted to do it. They loved doing it. And what did they get back? Well, they got liquor and sex. They got liquor and sex. That's what they got. Unfortunately, that's not available through this practice. Or maybe fortunately. Probably fortunately, really. Well, I don't know. Take your choice. Take your choice. Depends on the mood you're in. So I started Zen practice when I was 21. I was poor in spirit. I'd almost flunked out of college. My transcripts were riddled with incompletes, and courses I hadn't finished. My love life had fallen apart. I'd been dissed by the woman I deeply loved. What else? Isn't that enough? Oh, my family. Totally alienated from my family, et cetera, et cetera. I was poor in spirit. But I had an opportunity to practice. I met a Zen teacher, and I had an opportunity to practice. And during the first couple of years that I practiced, I couldn't sit still. And then when I would start concentrating, I would shake. It was weird. I would shake. And the more I concentrated, the more I shook. Some of you have had this phenomenon, have experienced this yourselves. But it just happened to me, and not a retreat, but just showing up for the zazen. So I was poor in spirit, but I practiced. I don't know why. Why do the Beatles keep going to Hamburg time after time? Well, I guess they got liquor and sex. Okay. Why did Bill Gates? Why did he do that? His parents didn't know he was. They said he seemed awfully sleepy in the morning when it was time to go to school. He didn't tell until after high school was over that he'd been there from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. every morning. So that's motivation, opportunity, practice. That's what this Zen stuff is about. This meditation life is about. And if you're poor in spirit, that's fine. But I wouldn't get too attached to being poor in spirit. Blessed are they who mourn, for they will be comforted. So, if you're having a hard time and you mourn, you're a lot more likely to be open and vulnerable. And if you're doing your meditation practice, that's quite good, quite wonderful. Wonderful. You may mourn sort of letting go of the kind of superficial life that so many people live, and those superficial attachments and the loneliness that comes from that. We've been having what we call Rohatsu Sesshins here, which means that Rohatsu is Buddha's Enlightenment Day, which we celebrate in December. We've been doing them here for years and years, and they're a week long. And when I used to go to them here, we had them around the holidays. Instead of having December 1st through 8th, we had them around, I can't remember that we had them between Christmas and New Year's or just before Christmas, but we had them then because we had teachers, a lot of teachers. And I can remember going home at night, and every night at going home at like at 9:15, knowing that I have to be back here at 5:45, and just sort of crying to myself as I would look in the windows and see all the lights and the decorations and people having a good time. I mourned that. And to do something that we really care about, sometimes we do have to give things up. And we will mourn those things that we give up. And it doesn't, whether it's meditation or not, there will be some mourning if we're really going to give ourselves to something in our lives. And as we continue to practice, we notice that more and more that we can't depend on anyone. We can't depend on anything, and we mourn that. But Jesus tells us, blessed are they who mourn, for they will be comforted. And I tell you as a Zen teacher, if you go into that calm center where you let go of all the things that prop you up, you'll mourn, but that's an opening to comfort. It's an opening to real comfort. Next, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. So, when we do Zen practice, when I've done Zen practice, when many of you have done Zen practice, and we continue to do it, we hunger and thirst for a life beyond the confines of ego, the rigidity of ego, which is always getting pushed and pulled and pummeled and trying to get along in the world. And we have to have a belief that if we continue in this practice, that we'll be filled up. We'll be filled up by stillness, by openness. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. And then more and more we'll just behave, as Reb Emerson says, in an upright manner. In an upright manner. So here in Minneapolis, for those of you who want to do Zen practice, and most of you do, and many of you are doing it, we have a lot of opportunity. We've got four Zen centers here. Four Zen centers. How many cities this size in the United States have four Zen centers with four teachers who've practiced for a long time, immerse themselves in the practice? And we have a lot of opportunity to practice because every year we add more retreat days and more sitting. So we have it. We have it. And as I've been talking in my talks recently, it takes some renunciation to do this practice. We have to renounce some of our attachments, some of our TV, some of our, I don't know what it is you guys do. I get attached to TV and then I go through an renunciation period. Then I realize that I need to sleep. you actually won't need to sleep as much for the most part once your meditation practice is established, but you shouldn't take that to an extreme. Because if you do, it'll zap you. So here's a story about renunciation, about how behaving with righteousness requires renunciation. This is from the Desert Fathers. A brother came to Abba Poman and said, "Abba, a variety of thoughts are coming into my mind and I am in danger." The old man took him out in the air and said, "Open your robe and take hold of the wind." And he answered, "No, I can't do it." The old man said, "If you can't do it, neither can you prevent those thoughts from coming in. But what you should do is to stand firm against them." So that's what we have to do. Although, that's not the way I phrase it. Because the way I phrase it, when we stand firm against something, then that firmness turns into fixed mindset. So we stand firm. I don't know. I don't like that word, actually. We just stand. Not firm against anything, but we keep coming back to it. We keep coming back to it over and over and over again. The book Outliers, he talks about the 10,000 hour rule. The 10,000 hour rule. And in looking at the arts, at the sciences, at people like Bill Gates, at the Beatles, he says 10,000 hours of practice it's not genius that makes people proficient. It's not innate skill. It's not intelligence. It's 10,000 hours of practice. So calculate how much zazen that will be. And don't get too discouraged, please. Don't get too discouraged. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. So the Beatles, I'm picking on the Beatles today. Well, I'm also lauding the Beatles. So the Beatles, they burst on the scene in 64. They were tremendously creative, productive, from 64 through 68. 69 and 70, they started to argue. They started to have a lot of friction. Their creativity seemed to be on the wane. It seemed to me like they had developed a fixed mindset. That all of a sudden they were someone. They were someone, and it got to them. And of course, it's hard for it not to get to you when you become the head teacher or the quarterback of the football team or the something or other. That's why being poor in spirit is very safe. Because as soon as you get something, it's very easy to develop a fixed mindset about it. So then we know what happened, and we know that John Lennon's death in 71, that for the 2 years before that, the Beatles were just not doing it anymore. And they were doing stuff, but not doing it. They'd lost. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. They'd lost that. They'd lost that. Nothing belongs to us, which is our key tenet of practice. On the other hand, meekness can be a fixed mindset too. Meekness can be a fixed mindset. So we should pay attention to that. When I was practiced a little bit with Robert Aiken Roshi, and I remember him saying to me, the stronger the ego, the more opportunity for living wakefully, for living openly. But I think he meant resilient ego. I don't. It depends on what you mean by strong ego. I think he meant resilient. I think he meant willing to practice, whatever it is. Whatever you believe, whatever you love, practice, without giving up, and without too much analysis, too much comparison. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Well, we could say, blessed are the compassionate, for they shall obtain compassion. Compassion, which is a key tenet of Zen practice and Zen Buddhist practice in life. Compassion. So I just got back from spending 2.5 weeks with my grandchildren. I have 2 grandchildren, 1 4 and 1 7 months. And I was spending it, a lot of it, on the beach with them. And so one day we were at the beach, and everybody was going gaga over my 7-month-old grandson. Natural, especially if you're a grandparent, but it's natural anyway. Natural. Everybody's going gaga. We're all going gaga, you know. really into him. Really having a fun time with him. And so my four-year-old grandson. I kind of see him out the corner of my eye, off to the side. And I see he's talking to a man, and then I see him come up to his mother, and he says to her, he thinks I'm real. So that's my 4-year-old, the 7-month-year-old, 7-month-old and the 4-year-old. He thinks I'm real, mama. So, compassion. So that man, this was a tall guy with a white beard that we didn't know. He could see that Ethan was sort of not part of the group and not too happy. So he went over and chatted him up. Just chatted him up. So it doesn't take much compassion, does it? It doesn't take much attention, does it? It doesn't take much love, much mercy to turn things around for people, to help people feel supported in their practice, in their lives. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. But that's practice also, isn't it? And sometimes we fall down. Like I just was ignoring my four-year-old again. I guess he's mine. Because I was having so much fun with the baby. But I had... So I had to be brought back. We had to be brought back. We have to bring ourselves back in our sitting and our lives. Continually. Or our friends can bring us back. We can use our friends to bring us back. Or maybe a stranger. This guy was a total stranger. Brought us back. And so that every day when we go to the beach after that, my 4-year-old grandson would say, "Where's that man? Where's that man?" And then the guy did come over another day, and I noticed my son-in-law chatting him up and offering him a beer. So here's some karma working, right? in the sense of good karma, a little bit of attention, a little bit of caring, a little bit of affection, and that can really help our lives. Really help. Let's feel connected and continue with whatever practice we're committed to. Whether it's the practice of being a grandfather or a Zen teacher or a lover. Someone who's shoveling the snow. I came back last night very late and I saw, oh geez, the snow was all shoveled around my house. I felt really moved. I thought, oh, I wonder who did that. Some wonderful bodhisattva. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So, you know, we don't get into God much in Zen. In fact, we don't get into God at all. But blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall know the Buddha nature. They shall know the still mind. They shall manifest it. The still mind that includes everything. And by freeing ourselves from that which covers that still mind, that open heart, that pure heart, we pretty easily can know our Buddha nature. Pretty easily can manifest it. But to have a pure heart, we gotta let go of a lot of stuff. We gotta let go of a lot of beliefs. And even the belief that through 10,000 hours of practice or 1,000 hours of practice we'll get enlightened. We gotta let go of that belief and still practice. Because that is a flexible mindset, not the rigid mindset. So, about belief, here's a story. About Mara. Many of you know Mara, the devil in Buddhism, right? One day, Mara, the Buddhist god of ignorance and evil, was traveling through the villages of India with his attendants. He saw a man doing walking meditation whose face was lit up in wonder. The man had just discovered something on the ground in front of him. Mara's attendants asked what that was, and Mara replied, "A piece of truth." "Doesn't this bother you when someone finds a piece of the truth, O evil one?" his attendants asked. "No," Mara replied. "Right after this, they usually make a belief out of it." And well, that's mostly what religion is, isn't it? Mostly religion is belief. And that happens in Zen and Buddhism too. It happens in all religion because belief is how we define our world, how we construct our world. But we need to be careful. And if you think about all of the different religious rituals there are, and you think, if you really look at those rituals, they're all quite similar. Everybody thinks they got the best one. And when we chant the Heart Sutra in the morning, we're chanting ours is the best. Everybody does that. They chant theirs is the best one. That's too bad. I feel sad about that. Because belief in a ritual is still belief, and belief separates us. It's not relationship. So here's another story about how difficult it is for us to keep our beginner's mind, our pure heart mind, so that we can see God, so that we can know the Buddha nature, so that we can act from it. Not believe in it, but manifest it. When the guru sat down to worship each morning, the ashram cat would get in the way and distract the worshippers. So he ordered the cat be tied during evening worship. After the guru died, the cat continued to be tied during evening worship. And when the cat expired, another cat was brought to the ashram so that it could be duly tied during evening worship. Centuries later, learned treatises were written by the guru's scholarly disciples on the liturgical significance of tying up a cat while worship is performed. Well, there it is. That's what we do. That's what we do. That's what we do. Francis de Sales, who started an order of monks, which had some key rituals in it, was once asked what would it be like for him if the Pope forbade him to practice the ritual of his new order. And he said, 10 minutes of meditation and I would think no more about it. Finally, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. So this is about settling into our peaceful Buddha nature and then becoming peacemakers, taking it on into the world, or taking it on into the world as we settle in. And that means sometimes going into very chaotic situations. And this is, life is chaotic. Life is chaotic. Relationships are hard. And life is chaotic. But blessed are the peacemakers, meaning those of us who go out, who encounter each other, who work on a relationship, who don't just withdraw within some peace of mind that we've got. Because that peace of mind that we've got all of a sudden becomes a fixed mindset. My peace of mind. Seventh day of Sesshin. Finally got a little peace of mind. No, I'm not going to go see him tomorrow because he's going to bum me out. Etc., etc. So here's another story. I get two more stories about relationships and about kind of the difficulty and yet the importance of relationships. A brother asked Abba Matthoes, this is from the Desert Fathers, "What shall I do? My tongue causes me trouble, and whenever I am among people, I cannot control it, and I condemn them in all their good needs and good deeds and contradict them. What therefore shall I do?" The old man answered him, "If you cannot control yourself, go away from people and live alone. For this is a weakness. Those who live together with others ought not to be square but round in order to turn toward all." Further, the old man said, "I live alone not because of my virtue, but rather because of my weakness. You see, those who live among people are the strong ones." So this practice is about having the strength to come back to the difficult relationship and work with it and be with it and make peace with ourselves and the other person in that relationship. Another piece of research is by a guy named George Vaillant, V-A-I-L-L-A-N-T, from Harvard. A 40-year longitudinal relationship, 40-year longitudinal research on a large cadre of people. And the end of the 40 years, his conclusion was, happiness is most related to relationship. It's not related to career. It's not related to material wealth. It's not related to health. You'd think it would be physical health. But it's relationship. It's relationship and relationships. Blessed are the peacemakers. We're peacemakers in our relationships. And sometimes we're war makers in our relationships too. But through this practice of emptying out, through this practice of developing a flexible mindset and letting go of a fixed mindset, we can continue to work and play together. two more stories, okay? This is a Hasidic story. Rabbi Elimelech once set out for home from a city he had visited, and all the Hasidim accompanied him for a long stretch of the way. When his carriage drove through the gate, he got out, told the coachman to drive on, and walked behind the carriage in the midst of the throng. The astonished Hasidim asked him why he had done this. He answered, "When I saw the great devotion which you were performing, the good work of accompanying me, I could not bear to be excluded from it." That's pretty good. And Tolstoy's advice about living peacefully: the most important person is always the person with whom you are, who is right before you. For who knows if you will have dealings with any other person in the future? The most important pursuit is making that person, the one standing at your side, happy. For that alone is the pursuit of life. He and George Valen would have gotten along. Me and Jesus would have gotten along. And of course, our vow that we do here is the Bodhisattva vow. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to freedom. So we do that over and over again. Finally, Chuang Tzu, who was a contemporary of Buddha and whom we've done a class on here before. In the age when life on earth was full, no one paid any special attention to worthy men, nor did they single out the man of ability. Rulers were simply the highest branches on the trees, and the people were like deer in the woods. They were honest and righteous without realizing that they were doing their duty. They loved each other, did not know this was love of neighbor. They deceived no one, yet did not know they were men to be trusted. They were reliable and did not know that this was good faith. They lived freely together, giving and taking, and did not know that they were generous. For this reason, their deeds have not been narrated. They made no history. And one of my premises is the Beatles were great until they felt they were making history. And I'm not picking on the Beatles. I'm asking us to pay attention to ourselves, pay attention to our lives, pay attention to our commitments. Finally, a poem by Mary Oliver. "I am nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell, they'd advertise. You know, how dreary to be somebody, how public, like a frog, to tell one's name, the livelong June, to an admiring bog." So I think that's what I want to say this morning. I'm glad to entertain questions or comments or stories or songs. Anybody?
I keep thinking of that rock site. You may find sometimes, you may find. You can't always have what you want.
Oh, no.
You can't always have it, but you may find sometimes you get what you need. And then I was thinking of the other one about, love the one you're with. Love the one you're with.
Yeah. That's right. What else?
appreciated all of the stories and bits and pieces. Very nice talk.
Thank you.